I grind for the love of the game. It's good to be back. Long time no see. We grind for the love of the game. Flying J and Natron Queen. Podcast game, Luca and Kyrie.
Playoff aversion here. You're in mid-playoff form right now.
I appreciate it. I literally thought about that one today while taking a nap. It like came into my head. But yeah, Luka and Kyrie. That's
Kyrie entering your dreams.
I also envisioned you would ask which one of us was Luka and which one was Kyrie.
Okay. Yeah. What's the answer then?
I was gonna say that I think that the relationship is so symbiotic that it actually doesn't matter.
Wow. That's just like we're starting off with all the feels at this point. This is a really nice podcast. We're pivoting to a romance advice pod. But speaking of which, how awesome have these playoffs been? Can you remember enjoying a playoff more than this in years?
No, it really has had like it just had the joy and like randomness of the NCAA tournament. Like it really it's just felt different. There's just something the NBA playoffs, especially the first few rounds, you get, you know, some surprises here and there, but it just felt so unscripted. I can't remember a time where it felt like that since maybe the 99-2000 lockout season where the Knicks made the run to the finals as an 8 seed. You had a lot of chaos back then, but you know, having the Pacers get as far as they did, you know, obviously we have a 5 seed in the finals with the Mavericks.
Right. Yeah, I mean, and that one you're talking about, those were best of fives, right? Those were best of sevens.
Exactly. Yeah, the Knicks beat the Heat that year in a best of five on the Allen Houston runner where he ran off the court and pumping his fist. Now, this was post-Starks. They moved on from Starks. He put up – John Starks in 94 against Houston Rockets put up, like, I think a 3-for-18 game in game seven. So he was much maligned for that. Now, this was – I taped it on VHS, actually, for some reason, this Heat. That was the same series that Jeff Van Gundy just latched onto the leg when Mourning and Larry Johnson came to blows. Yeah. And you had PJ Brown, even little Greg Anthony, just had a bunch of enforcers. It was an interesting product. I've definitely enjoyed this year's playoffs more than that.
Yeah, that was a little bit of a bruiser. Yeah, it's been, like you mentioned, it's so fun because we never get the mystery involved. You never get the randomness where the NBA is really often so chalky. You can predict ahead of time which one or two, or maybe if you're lucky, three teams are going to win it. And I feel like oftentimes, you know, there's been so many years where you knew which one or two teams was going to win it before the season even started. So this one entering it in to have so many upsets and in each round, just kind of not knowing which team was going to be the best team has been really entertaining.
It was kind of fun hearing the experts because we're so used to being able to predict this stuff. You know, once the Nuggets went down 2-0 to the Timberwolves and everyone was like, this is the NBA Finals. The Timberwolves are now the team to be. And that just being flipped on its head and then being flipped back. And then they get to the series with the Mavericks. No, it's been incredible. So now that, you know, we have the team that had the best record in the league and still nobody feels strong about picking them as favorites. So it's fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. This is going to be great. Yeah. We figured we would. So to kind of get into this, we kind of figured we would take this little period of time before the NBA finals really start. It's kind of it is kind of weird. It's kind of a downshift period when you're watching basketball every single night to all of a sudden have a week totally off. But I figured, let's keep going on it and record a podcast in this space. But we wanted to kind of do this one, and it's kind of gonna be a fun, lighthearted thing. You know, obviously people, you know, there's, as you mentioned before we got on the air, there is some junkies out there, but obviously most people are not looking for necessarily fantasy content, but it was kind of a good time to take almost like a playoff overreaction podcast. And so the format of this one is I'm going to kind of be asking you, Jamie, a bunch of just kind of playoff superlatives and kind of just really over the top takes. And I want to kind of get your opinion on some of these things. And I made them a little bit hot takey because I wanted to see which directions you'd go on some of these things.
This is exciting. This is definitely the most true to form in how like Nate and I over the years talk basketball. So this is less structured fantasy advice podcast and more see how these ideas start brewing. So these ideas are fresh, kind of like how we get our topics going. as a podcast. So I hope you all enjoy it. And I hope I don't sound completely dumb because I have not researched this. So Nate, please put me on the hot seat. Where do you want to start?
All right. I want to start with who's your favorite 12th man in so far? No, I'm just kidding.
Steve Scheffler forever, number 55.
Yeah, I'm gonna start with some heat right off the bat. Kind of with a kind of an obvious one. One of these really, I think almost everybody's probably top three or four overall playoff performers, and that's with Jalen Brunson. He's been one of the absolute stars of the playoffs. He put the Knicks on his back and has looked like a superstar. My question to you is, have we seen enough at this point? Is Jalen Brunson now a absolute stone cold lock to be a top 10 pick?
No, I wouldn't take him in the top 10 personally. And it's not that I don't think you could get the production. I'm just still shooting for a little more upside in the top 10 mixed with certainty. I think that the historic, 28.7 points, seven assists, gutting it out in the playoffs, I think he is a playoff gamer. It doesn't mean that the regular season we're not going to see, numbers close to that. I'd have trouble getting him into the top 10. Just this is my first initial thought. I still have this association, this disassociation with it's still Jalen Brunson. And so if I'm sitting on the clock and I'm looking at, Anthony Edwards or Jalen Brunson, even Halliburton or Jalen Brunson, I'm still going to reach for those guys over Brunson personally.
I think that's fair. I mean, he was the 30th ranked player average this year, 21st last year. I respect your restraint on not being a prisoner of the moment and keeping him out of your top 10,
I might even take Kyrie over Brunson, this new peaceful Kyrie that we can apparently trust, and his efficiency is just rec I mean he's that his efficiency has always been incredible if you can get his percentages and just the surefire stats of Ky I'm interested to kind of get into Kyrie, but I think he's the player that I'm the most susceptible to being reactionary to right now if we drafted tonight. I say we drafted
Well,
today.
yeah, I don't have my list, so let's just dive right in there. I mean, if you can get 70% of the defense that Kyrie's bringing you in the playoffs in the regular season, like holy smokes. I mean, his defense has been locked down.
And we've talked about this before, Nate. His blocks are sneaky for a guard. I think one of us asked each other a question about who has the second most blocks for a guard in the league, and it was Kyrie at some point this past season.
Wow.
So yeah, his newfound commitment mixed with his ability to actually get the stats. He's been the player that I would say, as a pure basketball fan, I've taken the most joy out of watching, because you can see he's playing with such joy. And I think it could translate to a more trustworthy fantasy player next season.
Yeah, I mean, and if you're kind of assuming what you're seeing now is a reasonable average, and then you're going to have those games, those moments, those weeks when Luka obviously sits, and then you get a usage bump, then I think you're right. He's looking like one of the big winners as far as fantasy goes so far.
No doubt,
Well, sticking with the same team, let's just go right for the red meat. I mean, let's like why wait on this topic here? The people have come, the people want to know. They've seen PJ Washington in action this playoffs. They've seen him nailing these corner threes, kind of almost being one of the biggest stars again in the second round against Oklahoma City. Has PJ Washington done enough for you? His question is it just always been consistency in the past? Is he now a top 75 player? Are we drafting him that way?
want to start by saying that I think PJ Washington is a cautionary tale that sometimes it's hard to prognosticate who's a good stats bad team guy when they played for the Charlotte Hornets their whole career. And you can take that and say it for a number of franchises or situations, but people were so surprised to see this version of PJ Washington, and I really was not. I looked at his playoff numbers, they're pretty much in line with his regular season numbers. And so as a fantasy asset next season, his role is clearly more solidified, but I think his week-to-week fantasy ceiling is probably lower than when he was in Charlotte. So it depends what you're looking for. I think now he's become a very trustworthy glue guy without the same spikes. His playoff stocks are around one per game, just like they were in the playoffs. But now you're going to get that like crazy 35 minutes just locking in with Dallas. So I think he's the sort of player that they'll be tempting guys to drop next year, and you'll be looking at PJ, and he's actually probably going to have less spike weeks. So you might be tempted to be like, maybe I'm enjoying his 14.7 rebounds and his, the one steal, one block, and a couple threes. But I think the ceiling's going to be lower, but he'll be somebody that you'll want to hang on to throughout the season, even if there's somebody who's flashing and you're like, this is my second worst player as far as just, exceeding expectations. So I think overall, PJ Washington, more trustworthy, but you're going to see less spike weeks out of them.
Well, that seems like a really measured take. I like that a lot. I mean, he kind of is more kind of Cam Johnson, where before he was you just hope he was or before he was almost Tim Hardaway Jr. You kind of just hope that you caught the right week. So it's been, I think, people that have been listening to Projecting the Jump for a while and have known that we were both a little bit higher on PJ Washington than consensus. It's been fun to see him in the playoffs, and it's been almost surprising to see quite how consistent he's been. I think that's been one of the nice pleasures of this.
It has been nice pleasure. It turns out PJ Washington, UK2K, 2 years he played there. He's a winner. And what was that game against the Clippers in the first round? I think it was Westbrook was trying to get into his head and had started some crap. And he just like stood there and posed, with like his arms crossed. And he's just like, no, I'm an immovable object now. I'm like Luka's, I'm Luka's bouncer. Like you're not.
Right,
And
yeah.
so it's cool to see that
That
evolution.
flex like lasted like I swear it was like 20 seconds. It was like a caricature of a flex.
I would like a big head, just life size cut out of that flex.
Oh, solid. So moving on to a guy who did not have a strong playoffs, and that is Darius Garland. The Cavs obviously advanced past the first round, which was a victory in itself, but it was not because of Darius Garland. He had a quite poor playoffs in general. So my question to you is, we kind of have seen him shrink on the biggest stage 2 years in a row. And so is Darius Garland not, can we, is just strictly not a top 50 player? I mean, the other question is he not a top 75 player?
Well, I think if I was a team like San Antonio, real life terms real quick, he's a bit of a distressed asset in fantasy and maybe in real life. And I would be seeing if you could pry him away. I'm still a believer in Darius Garland. I do think that those games later in the series against the Celtics, when Mitchell was out, you could really see this just with more space. Him and Mobley, especially in that closeout game where they ended up losing it in game five, you could see the blueprint. You could see what the Cavs had envisioned. So real life terms, I'm just afraid that that we're going to have to break up that pairing to really see what he can do, for a full season though. It just let's wait. Let's wait and see if Donovan Mitchell or Garland find their way out of there. I'm hoping for a breakup for fantasy and real life reasons, but in the postseason, you're 16 points a game, 5.8 assists, 3.6 rebounds isn't getting it done. But he could be a bit of a post hype sleeper. If Darius Garland's sitting there in the sixth round next year, even the seventh round, I'd still pull the trigger on him. He has the upside, and we'll see what the situation looks like as far as the backcourt.
Yeah, it did seem like it was almost a matter of like his confidence got a little rocked this playoffs, and Donovan Mitchell is such a ball dominant kind of a larger than life confidence figure that it you could see he just shrunk a little bit, but he's a young guy, and so I hope that he's able to bounce back. I think we didn't see it this year. I've been a little skeptical on him recently. I mean, his averages this year, he was the 111th ranked player in fantasy on average. He was the 63rd last year. As long as this lineup's intact, I'm a little skeptical on it,
You
but
know
we'll
what's
see what
funny,
happens.
and it's funny about Garland. And tell me if you've tried. I think last year, shout out James Robinson, our league of record, had Garland last year. But in other leagues I'm in too. You ever tried to buy low on Darius Garland? You can't really get it done. Ever thought, okay, like if you're looking at his last 2 weeks, his averages, his production, nobody ever wants to be the guy to sell on Garland before the breakout happens. And I'm interested to see if he has a suppressed ADP next season. If he does become a value or kind of like a post-hype sleeper type where people are kind of, down on him and then he finally does break out.
Yeah, I guess it's all about where he falls in the rankings. I think that is a really smart thing that there's no bad player, just a bad ranking.
But we won't give up on Darius Garland here at Projecting the Jump, will we? You're disappointed. He let
I'm
you
more
down.
on the mid I'm on the Donovan Mitchell train, but I'm gonna lean right into that at this point here with you, and just stick with this backcourt while we're here, and just say Donovan Mitchell. I mean, like, holy smokes. Those games against Orlando, were insane. I mean, they couldn't get anything offensively going, and Donovan Mitchell was just literally their offense. So my question to you is, have we've seen enough here, right? Like, are we putting him in the top 10 every single year?
Think again, it's circumstantial. I mean, I think I'm looking at him and Brunson on the clock for some reason. I still would lean Donovan Mitchell. I just think of him more as an alpha, could be the second best player on your team. After you finish the draft and you're looking through your team and you're like, Donovan Mitchell, he's my second best player. You'd feel better than if you saw that Jalen Brunson was your second best player, wouldn't you?
I would.
So he still carries that cachet. But yeah, as far as the top 10, I think he's just outside of it. He's kind of in the Devin Booker, Damian Lillard, Kevin Durant range, as far as, you're hoping he's your mid second rounder. But the floor is pretty high, and we'll see. I mean, maybe he finds his way to New York, which would be strange. But I mean, I know he's wanted to
Right.
go there. He's from New York, but I don't know how that would work with Brunson. But him and Garland, we need to bookmark them and just see, if they end up in the same backcourt or. But yeah, he's underrated. He's underrated as a fantasy producer, but his real life ceiling as your best player, I don't know. I'm confused on that. I think it feels like he's a second round and out best player.
Yeah, I think it's tough when you have a guy that has just needs the ball in his hands that much and isn't a top 10 player, top 5 player in real life. So that kind of puts a cap on where you're at, unless the rest of your defense around you is really, really elite.
It's a good point about like he just isn't quite in that echelon that I think his teammates kind of look at him and they're like, what do you think? You're Kobe? Like you're Donovan Mitchell, and he also did. Nobody expected him to become this player. He still has a bit of an underdog perception, I think, even with his peers. I don't know if he's viewed as a top 10 player by his peers.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
So kind of leaks into the fantasy perception a little bit, but let me hit you with one real quick.
Random.
We're gonna stick to the top of the breakouts. I'd say outside of seeing this Luka and Kyrie thing come together and seeing Kyrie go from villain to just like, okay, look at he's people can change, it's the American dream. It's the Anthony Edwards breakout for me. It's the Anthony. And so I wanted to play a little nine cat on the clock with you with Anthony Edwards because I want to again kind of place where is he in our minds after the season he had in this performance,
Oh
because
man.
and it's a bit like your top 10. So we're going to kind of creep into last year's mid second round and we're going to see how far we can get here. Okay. This is called Ant-Man on the clock. Ant-Man on
Okay.
the clock. Are you taking Anthony Edwards or Devin Booker?
I gotta go Anthony Edwards. I'm going Anthony Edwards there. I think there's a little bit less competition for touches and the ceiling's a little bit higher. I'll take the swing. Yeah.
The defensive stat potential. Okay,
For
same
sure.
here. Okay, moving on up next season, Anthony Edwards or Damian Lillard?
This Anthony Edwards is gonna be this is such a challenging game. Okay, this is a fun game to play. I'm glad that you're throwing these out here. I
Gotta do it.
think, oh my gosh. So Dame has elite percentages. I mean, that is really helping him a lot. I think he has really high-end threes. I think I'm gonna go. Ooh. I'm gonna go
Tough.
Dame reluctantly.
Like if I know your style. I think I appreciate this response. Was I think if you're on the clock and you have 30 seconds, we're doing a snake draft. I do think you would take Dame next year. So I'm happy to hear you say that. I will quickly remind you of in 16 games in the playoffs, Anthony Edwards averaged 27.6 points and is shooting 48% from the field, 81.4% from the free throw line. I picture him as a worse free throw shooter than that, but he's not. Seven rebounds, six and a half dimes. He took a jump as a facilitator, and I was going through, and in general, assists in the playoffs are down. Like the leader was Luka at 8.8, and then everybody's below him, Hallie, everybody. And so he jumped up as a scorer and as a facilitator of offense for his team. So I thought that was kind of cool. So, and it could be, it's a small sample size, but interesting to me. So if you can tell me that there's a chance that Ant could average 28 points, seven rebounds, and seven assists with, the blocks potential, a block a game, and almost two steals a game. I don't know. For me, it's Ant on this one. If
I
I
like that.
was
I
on the
mean,
clock.
we you know I love Mike Conley and I'm a huge fan of him, but he's aging and they don't have another real distributor on their roster as far as guys that are going to be able to get the ball out. So if anything were any dip in Conley were to happen or any injury, Ant is almost your de facto point guard. I mean, he's not going to play the position, but he's kind of going to operate in that capacity.
I think you would probably pump 40 minutes into Jaleel McLaughlin and see what you have with the most underrated neck beard in the league. That guy is so bad, dude.
Let's go easy on the nerds.
He never looks like he knows what he's doing out there. But shout out Jaleel McLaughlin and Cheeseburger Randy Jokic. Hope you enjoyed the playoff run. Okay, so that's Dame for Natron, Ant for me. We're kind of moving through this like Hall of Fame fantasy players who are in their very late prime or maybe looking at a decline. The next one, Natron Clean, is Anthony Edwards or Steph Curry. Nine cat on the clock. Yeah.
Jeez. I think for the same reason as I'm saying Dame, I'm saying Steph. I just like the build around, and I like the idea of starting with somebody that I structure a team around.
That's an important point. I think that has you. You actually do have a style that leans a little more towards if you were to play Roto, I think you'd do really well, actually. So shout out Dan Bezbris. But that's a good point because Steph Curry, he just solidifies so strongly certain categories. And that is comforting when you're starting a build. And it gives you more flexibility moving forward. I'm still taking Ant. That's just how I play fantasy. I'm taking Ant next year over Steph.
Yeah, I think we'll see what I think it depends on what the Warriors offseason looks like, but at this juncture,
Yeah,
I don't know.
no,
It's
good point.
close.
Okay, this is actually a really fun game. Okay, one more. Remember, nine cat on the clock. Anthony Edwards or Kevin Durant?
I'm going Ant. That one's pretty easy.
Okay. That one was harder for me. But Ant narrowly passed him. So it's interesting. So you have these three veterans who have been first round players for a decade, and Dame, Steph, and Durant. Then you have Booker, who's I think in his stratosphere, but Ant took a jump. So this is what I'm calling the final boss level. This is where it really gets into like how bad do you want Anthony Edwards? And I have a feeling this could be quick for you. They weren't as quick for me. Anthony Edwards or Tyrese Halliburton?
I'm gonna go with Ant.
Assuming health, assuming full health for Halley, knowing he was a little.
I'm gonna actually surprisingly go Ant. I just think
Dang.
I think he might have another level, another gear ahead of where Hallie is, but it's this that's tough one.
Okay. Yeah, for me, I'm going to slightly lean Halley on that one. I get a little bit of, because of what you said about just knowing exactly what he solidifies for you and thinking that there's still, notches for him to rise. But I do think that the hamstring injury, rushing him back the way they did, maybe it having something to do with needing to meet a threshold to be eligible for awards for All NBA, foolish. And he clearly wasn't healthy, and seeing him get out some of those games in Madison Square Garden in particular against the Knicks later in that series was pretty impressive because the guy was not healthy.
Yeah, he just looked like he was 80% of the guy who we saw the first 3 months of the season. And
100%.
I think it was a little bit of a shame for a lot of casual fans that really tuned in during the playoffs, and they were kind of like, well, I don't know, he's okay. And you kind of had to put a disclaimer out there that, well, we're not seeing the full version of him right now.
That's a good point. If you were just jumping into the playoffs, you'd be like, dang, Andrew Nembhard's Pacers are an up-and-coming squad. I don't know if we're going to get into any Nembhard content and talk about the.
Yes, we
Okay,
are. I'm
we
gonna
will.
let's save that one. Yeah, let's save that.
This is the final boss here, and then we'll move on from Ant Nine Cat on the clock. Ant Nine Cat on the clock. Are you taking Anthony Edwards? Are you taking a swing at Joel Embiid next year?
Once again, this is an easy one for me here. I just think that there's Ant wants to be the guy. He wants to be an Iron Man. You can tell that from him. It's in all his quotes, everything he says, he wants to play 82 games. That's a really important thing to him. And it pains him every time he has to sit out or might have to sit out. So for me, I'm going to take that all day.
Yes. Hadn't thought about the Iron Man factor, but yes, it's Ant for me as well. Natron claimed because you did so well at Ant Nine Cat on the clock. I have one bonus choice for you. Nine Cat on the clock. Are you taking Anthony Edwards or the Tsunami Poppy? That's Kelly
Oh
Oubre, baby.
man, that is tough. That's tough.
Kelly Oubre is on the. He's on the. He's still. He's available. You're
That's
hitting
true.
bid.
It's tough. I mean, I think you got to go. If you have Tsunami Poppy, you get a team name. I mean, you can name your team after him, which is there's some value in that. I
get
think I go for
groupies?
that. And then you
You
can
get
always trade
groupies.
for Ants on a bad week. So,
Right.
that's
Right.
yeah.
That's a good point. You can flip Poppy at any point for Ant if you wanted to.
Yeah.
So
Decent
again,
playoff performer.
hard fantasy analysis. Now shout out Tsunami Poppy. We had to squeeze it in there. Thank you for playing Nine Cat on the clock, Natron. I'll toss it back to you for your
Oh,
next.
that was, yeah, that was real fun. I was, I wish I had a game to follow that up. That was quite as fun. But, how about I give you an opportunity to take one of your pleasures in life here and ask you about a Thunder one? But I swear this is going to be a softball here. My question to you is, will Josh Giddey, who averaged 12, 6.5, and 5 this season, spend more time on the wire or more time on rosters next season?
That's a great question. That's a great question. He a little bit in profile, and I think also in perception is like Ben Simmons. Statistically speaking, the way his career is going, he didn't obviously have the same pedigree. But as far as how specific, you need to consider his weaknesses when you have him out on the floor, and it's kind of like my bad cake theory. It's like you have to consider the calories when you're eating cake that isn't that good. And I'm thinking Josh Giddey is starting to get close to the line as far as team construction. But I think because of his popcorn numbers, I'm going to lean more time on someone's roster in a typical 12 team league just because people are afraid that they'll miss out. Maybe he floats his way somewhere else. He would be a fun, good stats, bad team guy. Let's see him just find his way to Charlotte. He can go, hang out with LaMelo Ball, and they can, hit up Instagram and do whatever, hang out with baddies and stuff. But yeah, I would like to see Giddy end up on like bad teams for the rest of his career and just pick up and put up numbers. That'd be kind of fun.
Yeah, it's tough because he really needs the ball in his hands, and he just can't make it work at this juncture without it. And that's even with Chip Engel as his shooting coach. So I worry. I would be concerned about drafting him next season because the concern was that Cason Wallace and some of the other young guys are going to be eating into his minutes, and his minutes per game are going to kind of be doing a slower downward progression. So I'm gonna, yeah, I'm nervous about him unless he gets the coveted three position eligibility again next season.
So I just pulled this up, Nate, because I think it's important when answering the question before we move on. So he's still on his rookie contract. He's entering the last, looks like he's, yeah, 24, 25. He's entering the last year of his rookie deal. So they got one more year to decide what they want to do with that. I can't imagine they extend him, but they're not the type of team to let assets just walk for nothing. So we'll see. We'll see if he ends up somewhere else. That'd be fun.
Yeah, could be on the Blazers.
Right, enough Josh Giddey talk. I answered your question. What do you got next?
All right. My next question for you, it's going to be Nemhard to keep Andrew out of the top 75 next season.
Oh boy, yeah. I'm getting Nim hard just thinking about some of those performances he had against the Knicks. No, man, like gosh, it was gutsy. Like I didn't know he had that in him. I think once he hit that kind of fluky three-pointer, he was playing really bad against the early on in that series against the Knicks, and it was against the Knicks and he hit the game winner, right? It was against the Knicks.
Yeah, and like universally, everybody was like,
Right.
that's a bad
I
shot.
know.
And it was
Yeah.
like, I was like, oh, wait, he still hit the game-winning three-pointer. Like, let's go a little easy on him, like, bad shot thing.
And then at the very end of those games, the last two games in particular, you could just see the gas tank run out and he'd be running up the court and he'd be like, dude, pull it back, stop running frantically. You have plenty of time. But I just think like the glass slipper effect, like he got every ounce he could out of his abilities.
Yeah, that was I was amazed. I think we've had this kind of running debate the last two seasons between
Yeah, that's true.
between who is the prime backup point guard there, him or TJ McConnell. And it is interesting. I mean, Nembhard is now finally kind of coming into and flipping that role, although TJ McConnell is not ceding it, but it's just kind of Nembhard has been earning it. And it was cool to see. I mean, in both the first round of the playoffs and then when Hallie got hurt, especially. But I mean, Nemhard was earning minutes on his own besides that. He stepped up his points per game from 9 to
Yeah.
15 from regular season to playoffs. So I think you have a really strong progression. And he's only a second year player. I think is going to be like one of those trendy breakout characters. I think that if you're going to want him, you're going to have to pay maybe a top 75 value on him. And so I guess that was one I was really curious to hear. Like if your initial impressions leaving the playoffs were, oh yeah, I'm going to try to get this guy or not.
Well, I think that, when we're thinking about next season and draft season for fantasy basketball, the first thing you need to remember is to pump the brakes and that, we didn't have Benedict Mathurin in the lineup for any of those games in the playoffs.
Oh, good point. Good
You
point.
know, and he's a very high usage player. So I think the question is, and what I like is I like Nembhard as the off guard. He has his willingness to use the mid-range pull-up. He has a little bit of that, stop speed, stop, speed up, slow down, kind of mid-range game. I really think that pairs well with Halliburton's playmaking. So I like that. It's just another place you can go on the floor with the ball. Moving forward, I want to know, like, who are they really committed to as that, auxiliary scorer? Is it Nembhard or is it Mathurin? I think Mathurin, he can get to the line. He's kind of relentless, but he doesn't play within a team scheme too well. Too often, it's just like, it's my turn. Oh, these are the Mathurin minutes. We'll put up a bunch of shots. So I think the question is, how committed are they to Mathurin? Because when we're looking at his fantasy outlook and if he's even someone you want to take in the top 100, I think we need to know what his role is. So that'll be something we'll have to be reading the tea leaves on in the summer.
Yeah, it does seem like Mathurin is his game at the moment is really sixth man, bench scorer, and I think he would need to see a real progression as far as it just is facilitating to be anything better than a poor man's RJ Barrett.
That's a good comp. Benedict Mathurin has Chicago Bull written all over him. He's going to end up at Chicago Bull playing 35 minutes a game for like 7 years.
That'd be a short move for him. I imagine the U-Haul cost is only a couple $100 from Indy to Chicago. That's not bad.
From the team building aspect, who would you rather pump minutes into to see what you have when you're a team like the Pacers who looks ready to win, Mathurin or Nembhard?
That's a good question. I mean, I think you've hit the nail on the head as far as Nembhard can, I guess I have a lot of curiosity if he can be, your number two. He's a little undersized, but then again, Halliburton's really tall, so I think he gives you a little bit of flexibility there. I think you really need to see what you have in Mathurin. I think that is, his potential. He was a high draft pick. He's got the high potential. I think. I have a feeling that Nembhard could survive and thrive in a lower usage, lower minute environment, but I think Mathurin, you really need to get out there to kind of see what he has.
The outline of the player is still intriguing, so it's pretty hard to just kind of let the asset diminish because you found something in Nembhard during the playoffs. So that'll be an interesting one to watch. But I don't imagine that Nembhard's somebody that probably stays on your roster the entire year. So I'd be taking swings on real high upside guys in that 90 to 110 range. So I don't think he'll end up on many of my rosters. I'm going to be taking shots on guys that either can pop and hit, or I can cut them and move on to the Nembhards.
Okay. Yeah, fair answer. That's once again, I was expecting or was hoping for a little bit more overreactions on your part, but I think maybe these couple of days off in the playoffs are have kind of brought everything down to a little bit more reasonable level.
I'm too well calculated, Natron.
I guess so. I guess so. Speaking of calculations, I want to move on to a couple Denver Nuggets, and I'm going to start with Jokic, who, I think since he lost, some of the media hype is, hasn't necessarily had him as the best performer in the playoffs. To my mind, he still looked like the best player in the playoffs, hands down. I mean, I think he looked really exceptional.
Yeah,
I
agreed.
think Murray's elbow injury kind of hurt them a little bit, and that was a tough matchup for him. But so my question to you is, A, I assume that you still have him as your number one player at this point on the board, and B, we just see him step up every single year and play heavy minutes. Talking auction, are you ready to pay over $75 for him?
Jokic.
Yes.
You know,
Do you think that's the right amount?
I think it's the right amount. So I'll start big picture, something that is tangible for everyone. The only reason that you wouldn't make Nikola Jokic the number one pick next year or the highest salary towards one player in an auction format, it's not for Luka Doncic. It's for Victor Wembanyama. If you want to be the guy to get Victor, you're going to have to make him the number one. I think he's going to go number one in a lot of drafts net, like right away. Like we don't have that extra year where you can see if he falls to 9 or 10 or 11. If you want Wembanyama, you need to go get him. And so I'll be interested in, like, for instance, in our league of record, I would predict that Wemby goes for more than Joker because of all of us that missed out this year, just being afraid of missing the craziest sophomore season we've ever seen. So I think the
Yeah, that is.
Wemby fever might suppress Joker's price by $5 or $6 on an auction down in the 60s, potentially.
Man, that would be pretty slick.
Yeah.
But it is interesting in the auction. I feel like sometimes the first guy goes and kind of sets the bar,
Right.
and then there's a little bit of a run, and it's almost the last guy in tier one that goes for the most amount of money.
Yep,
'Cause
yep.
you have in your head, you're like, I need to get one of these four guys. And then it's like, well, okay, well, now then you get into a bidding war at that point.
It's funny, like, so yeah, last year that player was Tyrese Halliburton. He went second highest. He got all the way into the 70s, and he was the last player in a tier in our league of record in that auction. So yeah, that's very correct. It's funny because the auction, there's so much randomness and chance to the auction format, just a quick format corner. I've still never won a fantasy title playing an auction. I haven't, and I would never give it up. But there's something about it. It's just harder to construct a team that makes sense because you're so addicted to the auction. There's chaos. You can have, okay, here's the group is all sometimes I'll be like, these are the top guys I'm willing to spend on. Here's the range. Here's the cap. Here are the six guys in the next range. Here's the cap. Like, and then I'll go through and I'll be like, I got my small four. Like, I mean, I have order to it, but there's just something about the auction that it's harder than just watching a guy fall to the seventh. And you're like, okay, I got my center in the seventh, so now I can wait till the 10th. And like, just the structure of a snake draft, it's easier for team construction. But that's why we love auctions, because it's just the chaos of it. It's the best 3 hours playing fantasy still. And I'd rather feel that feeling than win a title.
Yeah, that's the most exhilarating moments is, are those like hours on the clock. And it is hard. It's so hard to it's I feel like in some ways you're addicted to extracting value in an
Yes.
auction draft. And sometimes I get
Good point. Good call.
I know I fall guilty of seeking value
You're a
rather than
value
seeking
hound.
the player that I want or
You're a
the
hound
right thing.
for value.
Yeah.
You are a value hound.
Yeah, for good or for bad. I'm at
You've always
Goodwill. I'm like
been.
sifting through the bins. I'm like,
Yes.
do we need a third clock for the house? Like, it's only 25 cents. Like, we could use one of these things.
Just a small asterisk on what I said. I believe I won three fantasy football titles playing auction. Fantasy basketball, it eludes me. That's my dream. But yeah, it's funny. So also to just go back to your question about Nikola Jokic,
Where are the banners? Yeah, I thought maybe we'd see some banners behind
I
it.
have two trophies that I need to collect because I was in New Orleans. One is in Seattle waiting for me, fantasy football title, and the other is my points league dynasty trophy, which has my name's been engraved on, and that is in the Forest Grove, Oregon area. So shout out to the Giacomini brothers. If you're listening, I need my trophy. I'm coming for it. But yeah, I have two trophies I still haven't collected, which I look forward to recording with right in the background for an entire year. But what I was going to say is because I've had Nikola Jokic in my points league, in this dynasty points league, picked him up off of waivers when Logan Giacomini dropped him to pick up. It was back when Nurkic and Joker were still like this two-headed center thing in
Oh yeah,
Denver.
Nurkic was starting.
Yeah, exactly. He's on the waivers for. We have open waivers in this league. It's great. There's n just someone drops someone, you can pick him up instantly. I picked him up in 5 minutes and never looked back. It still haunts this man. He tells me he like wakes up in cold sweats. So because I've had him in this points league, I've never been as anxious to get him in category leagues, which I know is silly, but it's fun to have different shares of different players.
Yeah, I
So
see that
I'm
for
less
sure.
likely to break the bank at an auction on Joker. I've never won Joker in an auction or intended to.
Till this year,
Yeah, maybe that's my problem.
when we each spend $76 on them.
Okay. Any more
All
nuggets?
right. So moving on to another Nuggets player, a guy who was not a performer this year. Well, he had a good first round. So Michael Porter Jr., at this point, large enough sample size. He's just not a top 50 player.
Nope. No, he's not. I do think that it's worth mentioning that he is a very good fourth option. for an NBA team. He's an incredible scorer, silky smooth jump shooter. I think he can handle a little bit more than he's been able to show in Denver. So, I will say to his credit, like, if he wanted to be the second, if he wanted to be the second option on a team that's just trying to make the play in, I think he could be a top 30 fantasy player. I still think the skill set's there is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But I, in the outline of just a fantasy friendly profile, but I think he just has these games where, because he is the fourth option and it, Aaron Gordon played so well in the playoffs and he's more trustworthy when it's time to win, he can fade into the background statistically. You're looking at it and you're like, what the hell is this? So yes, as long as he's with this Denver Nuggets team, we need to stop reaching for him as if he has some uncapped potential in that role. But as a fantasy player, I still believe in as he has the talent to be like a top 30 option if he ever had an expanded role on a different team.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. That's a really good read on that. Yeah, I think it was this. I mean, we've seen this. I feel like he was always a mystery, a little bit, or an intrigue, because he was. We'd see small sample sizes, injury, small sample size, injury, and then you kind of wondered, all right, if he puts it together, this is what we'll see. What will we see? If you can kind of catch lightning in a bottle like that. But I think we've seen a few seasons where he's okay. I mean, this playoffs, he averaged 6 extra minutes per game, but his points, rebounds, and assists and field goal percentage were all worse than the regular season. So I think we saw a dip down. I mean, I do want to throw out I was kind of thinking about this. There's a little bit of a caveat for some of these players that, and I don't necessarily think that Michael Porter falls into this category, that have bad playoff performances. I mean, I think they're. Yeah. It's tough because, I think the regular season is 6 months. And then a lot of players, they make that jump over the off season. They have that time to kind of put in the work on everything like that. But occasionally you almost need to take these lumps in the playoffs to expose where your weaknesses are. I mean, I think about Portland in 2018, they were the 3 seed and they got swept by New Orleans. And Dame just got embarrassed. They completely got shut down by Jrue Holiday and Anthony
serious.
Davis. And that offseason, it was what kind of actually transformed Dame into a decent player, into a star, is because he realized, I need to kind of have something that playoffs or, kind of defenders can't take away. And that we saw that shoot up. And so I am curious, I think, with all of these players that we're talking about here, especially the guys that have had poor playoff series, that what lessons they take from that and they're able to build on them this offseason, and which one of these guys had poor playoffs and almost more got exposed, and then you're like, oh, the book's out on this guy, leave him alone out there, let him shoot the mid-range, he can't hit it. And I think that's going to be kind of the really interesting thing to kind of take away from these playoffs, or playoffs this time of year in general, just to see which one of these, who do we like long term and who kind of got exposed?
Who was exposed was your boy Max Strus. He was, in 36 minutes a game, he just looked like he looked like he really didn't belong out there. His numbers bear that out. Michael Porter Jr., as bad as he looked, he still averaged over 40% from three on almost 7 attempts. So
He was lights out against the Lakers.
Exactly. So, yeah, I think that's a nice distinction. I think players like Maximum Strus might have been a little exposed
Thank
to the
you.
Playoffs. Yeah, you're very welcome. Bradley Beal, a little bit. Kind of what is the point of him, I think. And then players like D'Angelo Russell. Again, like, sure, he's a spark plug scorer, but if you're really trying to win a title, like, what are you doing with him? So these are the players I would say fell into the exposed category.
Yeah, well, I'm impressed by that summation as quickly as you did. But yeah, those guys definitely looked out of place, and they looked like guys that, real playoff defenses were just leave them open. Maybe they'll have a good game, but they're not going to have a good series.
Yeah, exactly. You have to have those guys. So, all right, who you got next for me?
Well, let's see. We got three left. I got three left. Three more questions for you. So the first is. And this is a little bit more recency bias, but let's lean into recency on recency. That is, Will both Dallas centers be top 75 next season?
No.
Will
No.
it be top? Will both Dallas centers be top 100 next season?
No. I
Daniel
don't think
Gafford
so.
was 38th last season, and Derek Lively was 126
In per game value.
on per game.
And that takes into account that when he was with Washington, right?
Right.
Yeah, I'm thinking with this one, I really like Lively as an interesting swing after pick 100 if you need a center. If you punt it on center early, I think he's really interesting. I think Daniel Gafford's minutes are going to be too inconsistent in Dallas because I think what they found with Derek Lively, and there's been a lot of ink spilled on this, just his ability to facilitate and keep the ball moving, see the play, see the guy to kick it out to, and then when the ball gets to Gafford, he's just a traditional center. He's a great rim runner. You saw some of the alley-oops from Luka in that game that I believe it's the one where Cat actually hit Lively in the back of the head with his flapping leg. Their offense doesn't look quite as dynamic with Gafford out there. So I think that you're going to have nights where Gafford gets 6 minutes. I think he's going to be a player that is situational. And so I don't see it in a top 100 season for him as a Maverick because I think Lively is going to be so instrumental to, for what they're trying to do, either defending their title or coming off their finals run. So I think Lively, stock up. But Gafford's going to be a situational guy. I don't think you're going to want to roster him all season because I think the lows are going to be like he can't play against this team for whatever, and they're still the Dallas Mavericks, so you're still going to get a little Maxi Kleber. Dwight Powell breathes, and he breathes in a Mavericks uniform.
True,
He's
true.
injured, actually. He's not playing in this playoffs, not because it's coach's decision, but he's hurt. So I think they still have those guys. So I love Lively's outlook. I think Gafford could turn into a block streamer, and if he starts getting the minutes, don't drop him until they go away.
Yeah, that's a once again, a measured take. I mean, I think we've seen them just their plus minuses. Both those guys, this playoffs have been amazing. You see them on the court. When they're on the floor, both of them have been elite. But at the end of the day, in the playoffs, Daniel Gafford has averaged 22 minutes per night. Derek Lively, 22 minutes per night. I think you're right. I think they're going to eat into each other's value a little bit, and those other two guys. I think that it's a one of those moments where or it's going to be a hard thing. It's you almost wish that it was cheap enough that you could just pick up and stream them, but in reality, you probably need to draft and hold and hope for something, kind of some minutes to break loose somehow.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm going through it here. Derek Lively, yeah, he's eighth in the playoffs in blocks per game at 1.2, Gafford 1.8. So, the upside with Gafford is still tantalizing. I'm just concerned that he's the player that will be not won't be matchup proof. I think Lively's fairly matchup proof for a rim running center. But yeah, we'll see how it plays out. But I do agree that if you want to take a shot on one and see how it looks when the ball's rolled out there for the start of next season, you definitely got to draft them. You can't, they're both going to go drafted in all leagues, I would think.
Right, yeah. Well, that's good. All right, we got two guys left for you. The first is this one. I don't really know how I feel about this. So I'm interested to see if you can provide a little bit of clarity. I have it written in a form of a confident take, but it is less confident than that. So Evan Mobley needed these playoffs to be pushed around and shown that he needs to step up his game because we saw that at the end of the Boston series. We saw Alpha Evan Mobley. So my question to you is, are we actually going to see a top 25 season from Evan Mobley this year? With the info that he was 40th last year and 26th the year prior to that.
I'm going to keep drafting them like we are. I think that's the best way I can answer it. Yeah, I would say game five Mobley might have been, from a personal fantasy analyst standpoint, my favorite part of the playoffs. Just like, yeah, just
Wow.
seeing, see, I mean, man, when he was like motivated to get to the cup and he still had just the smooth handles to be able to back his man down, he was clearly like frustrated the series was about to end. There was no Mitchell on the floor and he went and got his numbers and he looked great doing it. So yeah, I think third round pick, no problem next year. I still believe in the upside of Evan Mobley and Nine Cat. I would love to get Jared Allen out of the way because I think what you saw with Allen Hurt in that series is you got to choose, just like the backcourt. You got to choose. You need a more versatile, you need like an MPJ type next to Mobley. And it doesn't, somebody who can shoot that is lanky, that can defend. But you can't have these guys together. It's hurting our, it's hurting the fantasy assets. But I do think that from a team construction, it doesn't make sense. But yeah, that's, I guess, my most hot takey response is I'm going to keep drafting Evan Mobley like he'll be top 25. I'm not going to miss out on that breakout because it will happen.
Yeah, I like that. I mean, against Boston, it was 21, 9.5, 3 and 3.5 with two stocks. I mean, just really hit that another level, like you're saying. And he's so young, and I think there is, I think I'm hopeful that he's the guy that takes away being like, against Orlando, they shut me down, and I need to not allow that, next year.
He showed that glimmer that's going to keep me hooked. And I know we've both been big Mobley guys over the years, and we've went back and forth on whose roster he ends up on. And I'm happy to get into a bidding war, especially if Allen's off the team, because yeah, I still think he's going to have one of these monster top 10 fantasy seasons one of these years.
Yeah, I like that. So I only have one question left for you, and it's on a team that we haven't touched on yet, the team that went to seven games. But can you pick this team out yet? We haven't talked about them yet.
They got to a game seven, and then they said bye bye.
Exactly.
They said bye bye.
Yeah, they were in the East and they lost in the first round. This
Milwaukee.
team
Milwaukee
is
didn't get to a game
Orlando.
seven, did they? No,
They
they
didn't.
didn't.
No, they
Wow, that's
didn't
so
even.
sad.
Yeah, Orlando Magic is the team I'm gonna go for. And that was, in some ways, that was a tough playoff series because it was such a defensive dogfight. The guy who I am curious about here, and I suspect that you're a little bit higher on him than me, but I'm not sure.
I am.
And that is Franz Wagner.
No, I'm not.
And so my question to you is this: Franz Wagner is simply just a fringe top 50 player, nothing more.
Yes. Yeah, I like Franz, but his regression as a shooter, I don't get it. And it doesn't have to be permanent, but I don't know if it's a fit with Paolo. I don't know if it's that the offense is fairly low octane and he needs to play in a higher tempo. I think it actually, now I'm talking out loud, I think it is kind of that. I think if you stuck him in like the Warriors ecosystem, I think he would be the player we want him to be. But the way he regressed as a shooter, and he was, I had him on a team throughout the season, and it was kind of like that most of the year. He had his glimpses. But yeah, he just kind of turned into like a sub. I don't have the percentages in front of me, but I've gone through here the top 450 players in the playoffs as far as how many threes they made, and he's
He
not in the
shot
top.
27% from three in the playoffs and 41% from the field.
It's atrocious. He's not in the top 50 and makes for the average makes per game in the playoffs. Yeah, that was disappointing. So I'm a little concerned. I think maybe we got a little in over our skis as an industry on Franz Wagner. I took him a pick over Paolo Banchero. I won that league. I won a title in that league, so it didn't kill me. It was a 6-round pick, and my thought was I wanted a glue player who kind of gave you a sprinkle of everything, and I think that could still be true, but it should not come with a side dish of super bad field goals shooting. Like, I do not need weeks where he shoots 38%. He's not bringing enough to the table, and I didn't expect that. So, no, I don't think going into next year I'll have him in my top 50. I think we'll be hovering outside of it. As a prospect, I believe in the talent, but the situation he's in right now and what he showed as a shooter, I'm okay passing on him in the fifth, sixth round next year. How about you?
I'm so of two minds here. I mean, on one hand, you're right. The fit is tough because he is a shooter. He's an average shooter with a team with no shooters, and so he gets treated
Good
like
call.
Alpha Clay, even though he really isn't.
What if they sign like Malik Monk or something and it opens things up a bit? Because there's been speculated.
It would free up so much more space. If he had a lot more room to operate out on the wing, I think that would be a little different. And then I'm conflicted because, on one hand, in the playoffs, he still averaged 19, 7, 4.5, and he's only a second year player. He's 22 years old. So that part of it is really intriguing to me. I'm like, okay, so he averaged that, those stats while shooting atrociously from three. Like he It was cold beyond cold. The flip side of it was watching the games. The Cavs clearly just gave them the playoff treatment. They just went, yeah, we're going to let Franz beat us. And they left him wide open. So it's not a shock that he actually averaged this much because they just said, score as much as you want. We really are not going to guard you. So it's tough. You know, if he comes back and is shooting at like he did his rookie year with all the other kind of additions he's made to his game, then you're looking at a really high steal. But if he kind of that first year was an outlier, and what we kind of saw this year is the real life, then I don't know. I think he's maybe 55, 60 player.
I really like what you said about the spacing being congested in Orlando because there's not enough shooting. So that's a really great point. Also, I think it might make you feel better. I just double checked as I thought. He just ended his third season. So that was his third year.
Oh, third year. Okay, thanks.
And he yeah, no problem. And he did have a statistically his best season as far as raw numbers, raw production. And the field goal percentage still came out to 48%. So maybe we're being a little hard on him. You're right. We're each hemming and hawing a little bit on this take here. I don't want to
Yeah.
be out on him. I still like him as a playmaker, and I think you have something about the spacing because Orlando can be a real slog on offense.
This is going to be an interesting one. Let's revisit Wagner as we get closer to the draft, because I'm curious to see. I just kind of have a feeling that one of us is going to take a really big left turn,
Yeah,
and we're
it
going to
will
have him
happen.
20 spots different than the other
That
guy.
will happen.
And I'm curious to revisit that.
No, that seems like the kind of guy that'll happen on for sure. Okay, let me ask you this. This is an interesting one. A young guy who I think's gotten a little much hype, and we were both right about him going into the draft last year. We thought he was overrated, and he really was one of the worst ADP values. Just from an NBA perspective, who do you think's the more talented player, Franz Wagner or Mikal Bridges?
Ooh, interesting.
And I know Bridges is probably the better defender, but since he's been over there in Brooklyn, that's kind of subsided a bit as far as defensive stats. So,
Yeah, I mean, I think Bridges is the better player. I think Bridges in a vacuum is better. I think I like him in general. It's tough because as the number one, he's so overtaxed and his numbers are so suppressed in that regard. I think I would be curious to see this offseason. If they can get him a viable, you know, even a second banana, you know, ideally somebody that's better than him, you know, but I think they just need another alpha on that team. And in that case, I'll take Mikal Bridges. If not, I'm definitely going. If you know, they basically run these two rosters back,
right,
I'm
you
taking
can't.
Wagner.
The Magic are going to pay somebody. They got to pay somebody. They're going to get somebody in there. So that should help things. It's got to be a shooter. Okay, last one. I know this isn't playoff based, but I think a player we're going to talk a lot about as we get closer to draft season. Who would you rather have as a fundamental piece of your young core on on your NBA team? Franz Wagner or Jalen Green?
Oh my gosh. This is like one of these things where like if we were really good at social media, we would just snip whatever this quote is right now and replay it in 2 years, and it would make one of us look like an idiot and the other look like a genius.
It'd be one of those videos where our words were like big yellow bubble letters across the screen the whole time, like everything you say.
Did not believe in Jalen Green. Like so I'm gonna take Wagner. I don't think this is too difficult for me. I'm willing to have this. I think there's a high blow up in the face potential on this, but I'm definitely taking Wagner. I think he's fits with most teams because Orlando needs him to shoot, so he shoots. But I think he doesn't need to be that way with every team. And I think Jalen Green is needs the ball in his hand.
Let me put it this way. Has there ever been anything more fake that happened on Earth than those 20 games after Şengün went out for Jalen Green? Like, what
I don't
was
know.
that? What
That
was
was
that? That
boy,
happened?
you're right. We haven't really discussed that enough. That
We
was
haven't.
wow. Did they have the best record after the All-Star break? I
Yeah,
mean, that was
they
insane.
I can't remember the amount of games they won in a row after he got hurt, Şengün, but it was 8 or 9. It was up there. And Jalen Green leading the way, and then eventually it kind of fizzled out towards the end of the season. But yeah, that's going to be
Man,
one of the harder
I
guys to
couldn't have
pin.
been more happy. I had I had some coin on them making the play-in, and play-in only, and that was a
Good
ride
sweat.
there at the end. It was a good sweat for
Yep.
sure.
Hell of a sweat. So yeah, that's gonna be one of those players like you. I thought of it because what you mentioned, Franz Wagner. One of us is gonna take a hard turn and be the Jalen Green guy and tell the other one why they're wrong. And I don't know who it could be. It could be either one of us at this point.
Yeah. Wait, you're not gonna take a stance on this?
Ah, man, it's so tough. I want a little time to think about it.
Wait, you can't just throw out questions and not answer them.
Okay.
It's BS.
I'm still taking Jalen Green just in case. Just that like
I like it.
rare
That's good.
go-to scorer. Give it 2 years. Yeah, if my team is ready to win, I'm taking Franz Wagner. If my team's still bottom five, I'm taking Jalen Green.
Yeah,
Like if I was the
interesting.
Portland Trailblazers, I would rather have Jalen Green tomorrow just to see what you have.
Right, yeah. He has the potential to be
Yep.
top 15, top 20, and Franz Wagner, as we just discussed, does not.
Exactly. So this has been really fun.
Let me just ask you a question as we're on our way out the door. Who do you get in the finals?
My instinct pick is Dallas in six. I'd like to actually bet it as an exacto. I think when they get it back to Dallas, they're gonna finish it off in six. That's my instinct. That wouldn't shock me at all if Boston won. I just think when you look back historically, this is like the un one of those undeniable runs that you look back and you're like, kind of like Hakeem Olajuwon in '94, when you're like, yeah, Hakeem was always going to win a title, and this is the year it's happening. Or like the year that the Mavericks won in 2011, I believe. When you were like, yeah, I guess Dirk was always going to get one, and this was the year. This is the year Luka was always going to get one, and we're going to look back at it that way.
You're right. I kind of just assumed he would end up with at least one, if not two or three. I'm gonna take Boston, and you wanna place a bet on this?
Yes.
Cool. I bet you a beer.
Okay, let's make it interesting for the listener. The loser has to shotgun a beer at the beginning of the next podcast. And if we record in between, then not that one, obviously, but when the finals are subsequently concluded.
Absolutely. This is going to make fantastic audio content. Just somebody just like and then just burping on the mic for a little bit. This is fantastic. Absolutely.
All the more reason to make sure you're following us on YouTube and watching our handsome faces weave in and out of these takes. If you want to see us shotgun a beer, you'll have to make sure you're watching on YouTube.
It's got to be better than that time that I, in the middle of a podcast without letting you know, tried to beer bong a beer and my beer bong
Was
broke and
crazy.
spilled all over my lap. But I didn't mention anything. We kept recording.
What kind of sports podcaster takes a silent beer bong? It's all good. Just like announce the beer bong. You know what I mean, the base will be fine with You don't have to
Was
hide
season
it.
one. That was
Yeah,
season one.
it really was. It was very early on. Okay, we're gonna keep this thing on the rails. BTJ is an independent fantasy basketball podcast for the people. If you like what you hear, please do rate, review, share, subscribe this podcast. You can find BTJ on Twitter. You can find me, Flying J, at Quantophysics over on Twitter. Please make sure to check out SteelBridge Coffee, steelbridge.com/PTJ. And you already know the takes will remain scorching hot. Now, you got anything else?
No, I look forward to these finals, and look forward to getting back in here and seeing which one of us is the victor here.
And there'll be no, you have to make the hole, you got to do the whole thing. There's no prep. It's just a live shotgun. So, yeah, that'll be fun. I'm really going to enjoy the finals. Let's make sure we stay active on the text thread. For Natron Clean, this is your boy, Flying J, and we will talk to you all next time.
Later.
Peace.
Projecting the jump, projecting the jump, projecting the jump, projecting the jump. It's Nathan, Licky, and Jay. They're projecting the jump today. Will they guess right? Nobody knows. It's a pod.